I am the man that hath seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He hath led me and brought me into the darkness, but not into light. Surely against me is he turned. He turneth his hand against me all the day. My flesh and my skin hath he made old. He hath broken my bones. He hath builded against me and compassed me with gall and travail. He hath set me in dark places, as they that be dead of old. He hath hedged me about that I cannot get out. He hath made my chain heavy. Also, when I cry and shout, he shutteth out my prayer. He hath enclosed my ways with hewn stone. He hath made my paths crooked. He was unto me as a bear, lying in wait, and as a lion in secret places. He hath turned aside my ways and pulled me in pieces. He hath made me desolate. He hath bent his bow and set me as a mark for the arrow. He hath caused the arrows of his quiver to enter into my reins. I was a derision to all my people and their song all the day. He hath filled me with bitterness. He hath made me drunken with wormwood. He hath also broken my teeth with gravel stones. He hath covered me with ashes. And thou hast removed my soul far off from peace. I forgot prosperity. And I said, my strength and my hope is perished from Yah.
Well, I mean, this isn't I don't think we would consider this a Christian attitude, right? I mean, it's very hard to be cheerful in the face of such adversity. It really is. So you have to admit that you've seen affliction and humble yourself, even if you're a Christian. And that's difficult to do with the hope that we have in Christ if we don't want to, quote unquote, appear without our quote unquote faith. But this is Jeremiah the prophet, who prophesied so many things that came true by this time. He prophesied all this long before it was going to happen. And he said what would happen by this time, because now he's lamenting the destruction of Jerusalem, but he prophesied the destruction of Jerusalem. And even with that, his strength and his hope is perished from Yahweh, or probably on account of Yahweh.
Yeah, is that what that means?
That's how I would translate it, because the word is because of or by reason of. So I would write on account of.
Yeah, and from the Lord. Yeah. From Yahweh.
So it's hard. If a prophet of God, a proven prophet with a proven track record, becomes that despaired, that full of despair in light of these challenges, we can't really fault ourselves when we become despaired.
Yeah, well, we should maintain a positive Christian attitude, so I'm sure that's coming. And it sounds a lot like David, where David's always praying, like, you know, my enemies are murmuring about me. You know, the dust of death clings to me. I'm praying to the Lord and waiting for his redemption, sort of thing. David sounded like this.
Well, Jeremiah goes on to express the fact that he is humbled by all of this. David always had words of hope at the end of his despair. Let's see if Jeremiah does. I mean, it's been 20 something years since I've read Lamentations, right?
Yeah. Remembering mine affliction and my misery, the wormwood and the gall, my soul hath still in remembrance and is humbled in me. This I recall to mind, therefore have I hope. It is of Yahweh mercy. Of Yahweh's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. Yahweh is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. Yahweh is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of Yahweh. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. He sitteth alone and keepeth silence, because he hath borne it upon him. He putteth his mouth in the dust, if so be there may be hope. He giveth his cheek to him that smiteth him. He is filled full with reproach. For Yahweh will not cast off forever. But though he cause grief, yet will he have compassion according to the multitude of his mercies. For he doth not afflict willingly, nor grieve the children of men, to crush under his feet all the prisoners of the earth, to turn aside the right of a man before the face of the Most High, to subvert a man in his cause. The Yahweh approveth not. Who is he that saith, and it cometh to pass, when Yahweh commandeth it not? Out of the mouth of the Most High proceedeth not evil and good? Wherefore doth a living man complain, a man for the punishment of his sins? Let us search and try our ways and turn again to Yahweh.
Okay. Well, there's your inspiration and your words of hope, right? They came immediately after, right? Immediately after where you stop. But no, that's good, because that's in the same manner as David had done it throughout many of the Psalms when he was being tried. Expressing the desperation first and then expressing the faith and hoping God for deliverance.
Well, that's what it's like when you're in trial.
Yes. Yes, I would agree to that.
Out of the mouth of the Most High proceedeth not evil and good? I can't read that properly. I've got to change translations.
Yeah, well, out of the mouth of the Most High proceedeth not evil and good is a rhetorical question. And it should probably be phrased like this: do not evil and good come out of the mouth of the Most High? Okay. And evil and good in the way of mercy for men and condemnation of men, judgment of men. Because to man it's evil, but in God's eyes it's not necessarily evil. It's righteous judgment, right? But to man it's evil.
And
there was another
passage
up here. I want to try to find it, because a couple added words, like they'll change the meaning of a verse. And you had stopped at 19. In 19, we see that wormwood and gall are used as allegories, right, for misery and suffering, bitterness and suffering. Okay, where is it? Of course, now I can't find it. Now I want it.
Verse 23 has an added word, and 22 has
added
words.
Yeah, right in 23. That's the one. It was too short. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. They are new every morning. I don't know that they are. I mean, it is a plural adjective, but it's an adjective. It's not a noun. It's not modifying a pronoun like they.
User disconnected.
Renewed in the morning is how I would translate it. Renewed for the morning. Or new for the morning. It is of Yahweh's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. Shouldn't be there. Renewed every morning, great is thy faithfulness. Or refreshed every morning. That's how I would translate that.
So instead of the subject being his mercies renewed every morning, it would be the person that's renewed every morning? Is that the subject of
I think that the subject is probably still the mercies. But when you first read it, it seemed like the added words corrupted the meaning to me. It did seem like that. So I'm kind of ruminating it with myself now. If I was translating this, I would have a comma after not and have renewed every morning or afresh every morning. Great is thy faithfulness or something like that. And I try to avoid adding all those words when I translate. Sometimes you have to, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like Hebrew implies some things that the English net is more structured or something.
In some ways, English is more structured than Hebrew or Greek, but in some ways, Greek and Hebrew are much more precise than English, right? In my opinion. You also need a lot less letters to express the same ideas.
Yeah, especially in Greek, as far as I know. Let us lift up our heart with our hands unto God in the heavens. We have transgressed and have rebelled. Thou hast not pardoned. Thou hast covered with anger and persecuted us. Thou hast slain. Thou hast not pitied. Thou hast covered thyself with a cloud that our prayer should not pass through. Thou hast made us as the offscouring and refuse in the midst of the people. All our enemies have opened their mouths against us. Fear and a snare is come upon us. Desolation and destruction. Mine eye runneth down with rivers of water for the destruction of the daughter of my people. My eye trickleth down and ceaseth not without any intermission till Yahweh look down and behold from heaven. My eye afflicteth my own heart because of all the daughters of my city. Mine enemies chase me sore like a bird without cause. They have cut off my life in the dungeon and cast a stone upon me. Waters flowed over mine head. Then I said, I am cut off. I called upon thy name, Yahweh, out of the low dungeon. Thou hast heard my voice. Hide not thine ear out my breathing, out my cry. Thou drewest near in the day that I called upon thee. Thou saidest, fear not, O Yahweh. Thou hast pleaded the causes of my soul. Thou hast redeemed my life. O Yahweh, thou hast seen my wrong. Judge thou my cause. Thou hast seen all their vengeance and all their imaginations against me. Thou hast heard their reproach, O Yahweh, and all their imaginations against me. The lips of those that rose up against me and their device against me all the day. Behold, they're sitting down and they're rising up. I am their music. Render unto them a recompense, O Yahweh, according to the work of their hands. Give them sorrow of heart, thy curse unto them. Persecute and destroy them in anger from under the heavens of Yahweh.
Yeah, I think this is an important section, this last third of this chapter. I mean, it's all important, but first, that verse 44, it was interesting to me how Jeremiah used the cloud as an allegory that the cloud would prevent prayer from passing through to God. That's kind of interesting. I don't know why he didn't use the firmament. I'm kidding. Taking a stab at the flat earthers. I'm kidding.
That is interesting though, because like God always appears in the clouds so that man, because men can't bear to look at him, sort of thing.
Yeah. So God must he must live inside the firmament. So the heavens aren't his footstool after all. Or his throne.
Yeah, right.
Okay. I mean, they take the allegories way too far, and they're only allegories, and I think to pick on them a little bit is fair. Here, I mean, this whole last third of this chapter is an imprecatory prayer. They did. I mean, Jeremiah was only announcing what he firmly believed was the word of God to the people of Jerusalem, and they hated him for that. He wasn't threatening them at all. He was only telling them what God was going to do to them. And they hated him for that, and they put him in prison. And he credits Yahweh with delivering them from the prison. But now he wants Yahweh to avenge them for the evil that they did to him, which is fine.
And the imprecatory prayer seems to be against the enemies of God, not necessarily, you know, dumb people in Israel, but like these people who have plotted against him, their imaginations against him, they're rising up morning and night to devise plans against him. That sounds a lot like Jews, like how they wake up all day, every day, they're plotting against the just.
They do it that way. They do that. I know from experience. They do that.
Yeah.
They chase me sore. So that's a good example of an imprecatory prayer right there. Those last 15 verses or whatever.
Yeah, that was good. It starts at Jeremiah lamenting in his trials, and then he's turning to hope in God, and then he's turning to imprecatory prayer against the enemies of God and against, you know, even people in Israel who persecute him, maybe.
Yeah, it actually starts a little sooner than I thought. It's at 30 verses. Verse 21, he's speaking of we, meaning the survivors of Judah, right? Verse 25, he still is. Yahweh is good unto them that wait for him. And that's an example of us for us today also. I mean, we can't, what are we going to do to those niggers? What are we going to do to all these Chinese people here? What are we going to do to this evil government? What are we going to, we're not going to do anything. And this is a perfect example here of that Yahweh is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. And that always has to be first. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of Yahweh. Well, I think the Elijah ministry is a little different because we have to actively turn the hearts of the fathers to the children. But we can't really do anything under our own power. We can't. We're powerless. We better wait for the salvation of Yahweh, like Jeremiah said here in verse 26.
That's humble too. Like if you're quietly waiting, that's like humility before God. Right.
So then Jeremiah turns to the fact that their punishment was righteous because they transgressed and rebelled in verse 42. My eye runneth down with rivers of water for the destruction of the daughter of my people. A reference to Jerusalem, the daughters of my city. But then in 52, he turns, in verse 52 is where he turns to his own personal situation. So he's crying for the people of the city, even though they wanted to, the enemies among them wanted to destroy him, right? Which I think plays into what you were saying. It's just not very explicit.
Yeah, between, you know, Israelites who are dumb and enemies of God who know what they're doing and they're plotting.
Yes. Well, Well, we can probably finish the Lamentations tonight.
All right. How is the gold come dim? How is the most fine gold changed? The stones of the sanctuary are poured out in the top of every street. The precious sons of Zion, comparable to fine gold, how are they esteemed as earthen pitchers, the work of the hands of the potter? Even the sea monsters draw out the breast. They give suck to their young ones. The daughter of my people is become cruel, like the ostriches in the wilderness. The tongue of the suckling child cleaveth to the roof of his mouth for thirst. The young children ask bread, and no man breaketh it unto them. They that did feed delicately are desolate in the streets. They that were brought up in scarlet embrace dunghills. For the punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom, that was overthrown as in a moment, and no hand stayed on her. Her Nazarites were purer than snow. They were whiter than milk. They were more ruddy in body than rubies. Their polishing was of sapphire. Their visage is blacker than coal. They are not known in the streets. Their skin cleaveth to their bones. It is withered. It is become like a stick. They that be slain with the sword are better than they that be slain with hunger. For these pine away, stricken through for want of the fruits of the field. The hands of the pitiful women have sodden their own children. They were their meat in the destruction of the daughter of my people. Yahweh hath accomplished his fury. He hath poured out his fierce anger and hath kindled a fire in Zion, and it hath devoured the foundations thereof.
That's a good place to stop. That the gold, where Jeremiah talks about the gold, he's talking about the men of Jerusalem, of course. That's a parallelism of sorts in verses 1 and 2. But the sea monsters, even the sea monsters draw out the breasts. And that word is tanim. And it's translated as dragon, serpent, sea monster. But here we see that it must refer to a mammal, to something with mammary glands. And whales have mammary glands. Whales milk their young. I believe dolphins do also. Whalefacts.org has a page, whale milk. There's a URL. What is whale milk? Whales are marine mammals. So I mean that they could be seals. Seals are mammals. But seals, I just learned last week that there are seals on the Caspian Sea. I never knew that. I always thought seals were just Arctic or subarctic, like Northern Canada, Nova Scotia, places like that. But no, seals are as far south as the Caspian Sea. And I only learned that because there was an article on the internet last week that 1,700 seals had washed ashore dead for some unknown reason, which I think is probably a human-induced environmental reason, like perhaps sonar or underwater explosions or whatever. But 1,700 seals washed ashore dead on the Caspian Sea, and I was shocked to see that there were seals on the Caspian Sea. I don't know if you have them in the South, Joe.
We have some sort of seal or sea lion.
Okay.
I think maybe sea lions are like a
larger species, but I'm sorry?
I think like south in near Tasmania or something, there's sea lions or seals or something. I'm not sure. I know there's some sort of seal type creature in Australia towards the south.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is like in verse 3, it's almost definitive proof that word sea monster refers to whales, or to other sea creatures that are mammals. Now, I don't know if there's other giant creatures that are mammals. I don't know. But I'm sure that octopi, I should say, are not mammals.
And it's not a dinosaur either.
Right.
Yeah. So where it says even the sea monsters draw out their breath and they give suck to their young ones, where it has the semicolon, would you write like, yet the daughter of my people has become cruel? Like it's comparing the sea monster to the, like, even the sea monsters feed their young, but the daughters of my people are cruel. They don't feed their young.
Yeah. Even the sea monsters draw the best, they give suck to their young ones. Yet the daughter of my, it does demand some sort of particle adversary, adversative particle in English. I don't have the chance to look at the Hebrew, right? I mean, I can. In the NAS, they put but in italics, but the daughter of my people, right? Understanding that it's an adversative phrase. So, the daughter of my people has become cruel like the ostriches in the wilderness. That should get a but or something similar. And there is no particle at all in Hebrew between young and the daughter. There is a letter there, but I don't know the significance of that letter as a particle. There is a letter there. In front of the Habeth, which is the daughter, right, is a Hebrew letter that appears to be a particle, but there's no Strong's number 4. So I would really have to search for that to see what the hell it is. Or maybe I could just copy it, clipboard, and search it on the internet, and it can mean in, at, or with. The letter is a B. Yes. It's a bet, but it precedes No, it doesn't. I'm sorry. It's Beth. Okay. I was misreading the whole word. It's Beth Am. It's actually Beth Ami, which is plural, the daughter of the people. That's what it is. I assume that the that's a thab instead of a hey. I thought it was an article at first when I was first looking this up. So it is the daughter of the people. There's no particle there. There's nothing there to. There's no conjunction. There's no particle. There's no article. There's nothing in the Hebrew between the word for young and the word for daughter. So it's clear that in English you would want that adversative particle, but there is not one in Hebrew. And there is not one in Greek either. There's no in the Greek, it goes from words that mean their whelps, which is their young or their cubs or whatever, speaking of the sea mammals, right into thugateres, which is daughters of my people. So there's no particle or conjunction or word of adversative force either in Hebrew or the Greek. But we could see that in English, it does require something to express that adversity in our language, because it's definitely a clause that's contrary to what precedes.
It's similar at the 7, where it's like, her Nazarites were purer than snow, so were purer than snow. And then you get to verse 8, and it's, their visage is blacker than coal.
Right, and we could put a but in there also in order to make it make better sense in English.
Yeah, it's like they were whiter than snow and purer than milk, and now they've turned to blacker than coal. And that's a bad thing. It isn't that they were Negroes. It's that they were so hungry and sick that they were dying, and in their death they were becoming blacker than coal and skinny like a stick, their skin cleaver to their bones, slain with hunger.
Right. And here we see, right, yeah, you know, here we see that white is a symbol for something good and wholesome and healthy. Something white and ruddy is wholesome and healthy.
Pure.
And that's the way they're supposed to be. But that the blacker than coal is what happens in disgrace and in punishment. So no, their skin isn't black, but the black is used to represent their punishment, their disgrace, that their suffering that's come upon them. We wear black to mourn in European culture. In verse 6, Jeremiah seems to be implying that instant death is less of a punishment than prolonged suffering in bonds and captivity. The punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom that was overthrown as in a moment. In other words, they were instantly exterminated. They were all dead at Sodom, and that's less of a punishment than suffering and bondage and prison and captivity.
Same thing at verse 9. It says, they that be slain with the sword are better than they that be slain with hunger.
Yes. Absolutely. So in a time like this, it's better to die immediately. It's more merciful. Than to die of prolonged death and hunger and captivity.
And, you know, maybe some of those people who died instantly when they got the COVID vax, that was a mercy. Because it's better than, you know, your whole life being ruined.
Right. I believe
so. And continuing.
I believe so. That a lot of deaths from sickness, a lot of premature deaths, we might see them as premature, but you don't know what sort of suffering that person would have went through in this world if the person had lived. So when you know that you're going to live forever, a quick departure from this life is merciful. That's mercy. And if you're not going to live forever, then you're a bastard and it really don't matter.
Yeah, life is cheap in the bastard world.
That might also be an act of mercy, even on a bastard.
I'm going to read verse 12.
Which one?
David?
Yeah, which one?
What do you mean?
Said you were going to read something. What are you reading?
Lamentations 4:12. I'm continuing.
Okay.
All right. The kings of the earth and all the inhabitants of the world would not have believed that the adversary and the enemy should have entered into the gates of Jerusalem. For the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests that have shed the blood of the just in the midst of her, they have wandered as blind men in the streets. They have polluted themselves with blood. so that men could not touch their garments. They cried unto them, Depart ye, it is unclean, depart, depart, touch not. When they fled away and wandered, they said among the heathen, They shall no more sojourn there. The anger of Yahweh hath divided them. He will no more regard them. They respected not the persons of the priests. They favored not the elders. As for us, our eyes are yet failed for our vain help. In our watching, we have watched for a nation that could not save us. They hunt our steps, that we could not go in our streets. Our end is near. Our days are fulfilled, for our end is come. Our persecutors are swifter than the eagle of the heaven. They pursued us upon the mountains. They laid for wait for us in the wilderness. The breath of our nostrils, the anointed of Yahweh, was taken in their pits, of whom we said, Under his shadow we shall live among the heathen. Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom, that dwellest in the land of Uz. The cup also shall pass through unto thee. Thou shalt be drunken and shall make thyself naked. The punishment of thine iniquity is accomplished, O daughter of Zion. He will no more carry thee away into captivity. He will visit thine iniquity, O daughter of Edom. He will discover thy sins.
The cup shall also pass under thee, meaning that Edom will ultimately be judged.
And the anger of Yahweh hath divided them. That sounds, you know, like I might be able to cross-reference that to the judgment of nations, where Christ divides the goat nations and the sheep nations. Because further down, it's got like, we have watched for a nation that could not save us. And then it's talking about Edom versus Israel. I don't know. Yeah, so would not have believed the adversary or enemy could enter into Jerusalem. So Jerusalem's like multicultural or something. And then further down, you've got the anger of the Lord dividing.
Yeah, I'm trying to read back to get the full sense of the context.
And for the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests. So the prophet, the lying prophets, the false prophets.
Right.
Invited these people into the land
all the time, right?
And so Jerusalem became unclean. Depart ye, it is unclean, depart, depart. So Jerusalem's become unclean. And then the next verse, the anger of the Lord hath divided them.
The false prophets and the iniquities of the priests that have shed the blood of the just in the midst of her by preaching in a manner that doesn't expel the strangers from the land. They're basically are inviting the strangers into the land. But we see today that the churches are right at the forefront of all the immigration movements, every single one of them, all the missionary action and all the immigration. And the churches are all right on board with it, right at the forefront with it. So you got the enemies of God and the churches leading the immigration, beating the immigration drums for this endless third world immigration we're suffering. And it's the same thing in ancient Jerusalem. So it's interesting that Jeremiah tied Edom to the destruction of Jerusalem here, because that's what Esdras chapter 4 does. And that's also what the Psalm does. And I don't remember which Psalm, so I'm going to try to look it up real quick if I can.
No. Yeah, like Edom was saying, raise it, even unto the foundations thereof, that one.
Yeah. Psalm 137. The children of Edom and the day of Jerusalem who said, raise it, even to the ground. And here we see Jeremiah. That's like a third witness, and I really never noticed this before, and that's a third witness to those other two passages that I've quoted in that context at least a few times. So here we have a third witness, because rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom, that dwellest in the land of Uz. The cup also shall pass unto thee, meaning that cup of the wrath of Yahweh that Jerusalem had just suffered.
It kind of reminds me of that verse in Malachi where the Jews are complaining, we are poor and blah, 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 and we will rebuild the ruined places, you know? So they're complaining about how poor they are, and here it's saying, and shall make thyself naked.
Yep.
What do you think of verse 20, Bill? You know, the anointed of the Lord, we should be the anointed of Yahweh, and now we're taken in pits. But after that, it says, under his shadow, we shall live among the heathen. What is under his shadow, we shall live among? That's what they thought.
We shall live among the nations, right? And that's Judah going into captivity to dwell among the other nations.
Under his shadow, does that mean like Yahweh's going to still protect them while they're in the other nations?
I do believe that.
Okay.
Even Jeremiah had prophecies of a new covenant that were already in writing by this time. They had to be, if we examine the chronology. But it's hard to examine the chronology of Jeremiah because it's all mixed up in the Masoretic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this ties the Edomites to the destruction of Jerusalem, in my opinion, just like those other passages do. But here it's just circumstantial and it's not explicit. But it supports those other passages and it's supported by them.
Yeah, especially, and it even says, like, would not have believed that the adversary and the enemy should have entered into the gates of Jerusalem. And then you've got Edom just a bit later, so.
And that's another thing I meant to say in relation to this chapter before we leave it. Those words for an adversary and enemy, neither of those words are Satan.
Wow.
They're both sort of like loose synonyms of Satan, right? But neither of those words are Satan. The word for adversary is tsar, which can mean an adversary, foe, enemy, or oppressor. And the word for enemy is oyeb, which is a synonym from our perspective, an enemy or a foe.
Just a quick aside, there was a story on how the power facility was blown up in North Carolina, and they were doing this interview of this nigger bitch, and her name was Nakasha, Nakasha. This is the female of Nakasha.
Okay. That's kind of funny, but now people will be forever able to date this recording.
You want to do chapter 5? It's pretty short.
Yeah, well, I figured we'd finish it as soon as you got through chapter 3 so fast. But, I mean, I think we spoke about everything that was necessary to speak about.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to finish this. We got 45 minutes, right?
Remember, O Yahweh, what is come upon us. Consider and behold our approach. Our inheritance is turned to strangers, our house to aliens. We are orphans and fatherless, our mothers are as widows. We have drunken our water for money. Our wood is sold unto us. Our necks are under persecution. We labor and have no rest. We have given the hand to the Egyptians and to the Assyrians to be satisfied with bread. Our fathers have sinned and are not, and we have borne their iniquities. Servants have ruled over us. There is none that doth deliver us out of their hand. We get our bread with the peril of our lives because of the sword of the wilderness. Our skin was black like an oven because of the terrible famine. They ravished the women in Zion and the maids in the cities of Judah. Princes are hanged up by their hand. The faces of the elders were not honored. They took the young men to grind, and the children fell under the wood. The elders have ceased from the gate, the young men from their music. The joy of our heart is ceased. Our dance is turned into mourning. The crown is fallen from our head. Woe unto us that we have sinned. For this our heart is faint. For these things our eyes are dim. Because the mountain of Zion, which is desolate, the foxes walk upon it. Thou, O Yahweh, remainest forever. Thy throne from generation to generation. Wherefore dost thou forget us forever and forsake us so long time? Turn thou us unto thee, O Yahweh, and we shall be turned. Renew our days as of old, but thou hast utterly rejected us. Thou art very wroth against us.
Our skin was black like an oven. So once again, we see black used as a adjective describing disease and suffering.
Because of the terrible famine. So if anyone wants to say they were black, you know, innately, well, it says because of the terrible famine. So that's a bunch of bullshit. Niggers don't turn black because of a famine. They're always black.
Yeah, right. In fact, most of them are pretty damn fat if you saw some of the posts I made in a forum recently.
Microphone muted.
Did I post them in the forum? Probably not. I put them on with Fabulous, I think. That this black woman's so big that she can't get out of her car without help. And she's just ridiculously huge, man.
Hippo hybrid.
I'm sorry. And there's another one just like her, just as big, that eats her mattress. She eats her mattress. She eats a square foot of mattress a day, according to the video. And she's eating the foam mattress right in front of you on the video. So I asked how many calories in a mattress, because she must weigh about 500 pounds.
Microphone activated.
Well, at least Dad won't be alone in the world.
Wow. She'll always have a bed to sleep on. She's wearing it on her ass.
Yep.
They ravished the women in Zion and the maids in the cities of Judah. Of course, they were raping women as war booty in those days too, right?
User entered your channel.
Princes are hanged up by their hand. That sounds like crucifixion, which was actually practiced by the Assyrians. I know that historically. It's in inscriptions. And I wouldn't doubt that the Babylonians also practiced it. So I think that's what it means by princes are hanged up by their hands.
If you go back to verse 2, it says, our inheritance is turned to strangers, our houses to aliens. And then a bit down at verse 5, it says, we labor and we have no rest. That sounds like the curses from Deuteronomy. And it also sounds like, you know, these aliens feeding on God's holy mountain. So we have no rest. These strangers are always feeding on us and taking all the fruits of our labor.
Right. But it's sure that Obadiah was writing when Jerusalem was already destroyed. I'm pretty confident about that.
Oh.
But yes, I'm sure that his visions had a near meaning and a far meaning, just like most of the other prophecies. Except that Edom has never totally been destroyed as Obadiah prophecy, so it can't be fulfilled yet. Someday I'll make an elaboration on my ordering of the minor prophets. I have Obadiah coming after Jeremiah and Ezekiel.
You see at verse 7 how they've added the words, like it says, our fathers have sinned and are not, and it adds the words and are not. So without and are, it would say our fathers have sinned not, and we have borne their iniquities.
Fathers, plural, have sinned, perfect plural, so it's past tense perfect and it's plural. Fathers have sinned. There's some interesting things going on here.
I think that not must mean death or something.
Okay. There's two readings, and one of them has a vav preceding it, that they're both the word ayin. Which is an Aleph, Yod, Nun, Mem, Ayim. No, it's precedes, it's Aleph, Vav, Nun, but it's got an M letter prefixed to the end. And the dictionaries aren't telling me what it means. So I would have to study that. That's what sucks about Strong's Concordance, is that it doesn't tell you all, supply all the particles. It doesn't.
Microphone muted.
So there's one occurrence of this word, and in the Hebrew, it's in Bible Works. If you look at it, it's in parentheses. And there's another occurrence following that in brackets. And it's the same word, but it's preceded by a vav, which can mean and, or but, or when, or it could, that word for not or nothing, it's really not or nothing. It's just, it's not simply not, N-O-T, right? It's not, meaning nothing.
I see, yeah.
And I don't know, the Septuagint and the NAS has no more. Our fathers sinned and are no more. Now that and is in an alternate reading in the Hebrew text. Wow. But then there's another verse, another word, we in parentheses, and another word, and we in brackets. So there's two different readings of this verse. I want to see if this is in the Dead Sea Scrolls Bible. I'm lazy. I rolled my chair over to my bookcase instead of getting my ass out of it. Sorry. Isaiah, Jeremiah. Uh-oh. What do we got going on here? Doesn't look like Lamentations unless they put it in a different place. Yeah, they did. 622. For some strange reason, they put the books in a different order here. Our fathers sinned and are no more, and we have borne their iniquities, is how they read it in the English of the Dead Sea Scrolls Bible. But the truth is that most of these words aren't there. They've supplied them. I don't know why, but I think they supplied them from Septuagint manuscripts of Lamentations. Our fathers sinned and are no more, and we have borne their iniquities. That's how they interpret that. And that's the same way it's appears in the King James, basically, except they those words and are don't belong there. And it could very well say our fathers have sinned not, but we know that Jeremiah has already admitted that they've sinned, so that reading doesn't make any sense. So in the first reading that's in parentheses, it would say our fathers have sinned not, nothing, right? Which has basically the same meaning. But if we follow the second reading that they have in brackets, there's a vav in between sinned and not, and that would be our fathers have sinned and are not. And that would be one of the readings of, I guess, some of the Hebrew manuscripts, where others don't have the vav. So I would choose that reading because it makes sense in the context of the rest of the chapter, where without the vav, it doesn't make sense. So the King James Version didn't have to necessarily put that and in italics. They didn't have to, because it does exist in some of the Hebrew manuscripts. Now, with that same secondary reading, it would say, and we have borne their iniquities. Our fathers have sinned and are not, and we have borne their iniquities. That's the second reading provided in Bible Works. And that's the one that makes sense to me. You can check it out if you follow the Hebrew with your mouse.
Yeah, I tried. I'm not as good with the Hebrew. I've got Bible Works open and I was following along.
Okay, well, that first word in Hebrew, if you put your cursor over, that's father and it's plural, and I can see that it's plural from the form. And the second word is the verb sin, to sin, and that's third person perfect common plural, which is sin, right? It's an act that's finished. And then the third word is not or nothing, and it's in parentheses, and skip that one.
Yeah, I see that. Word, yeah.
To the fourth word, where it's the same word, but it has that vav in front of it. You see that? And that means and.
Yeah.
And the rest of the letters are the same. It's the same word. So our fathers have sinned and are not. And the R is implied in Hebrew, but we have to add it in English. Then you skip the word after that and you go to the next one, and that's and we rather than just we, right? Their iniquity have borne. It's really iniquity have borne, but there is added because that's also implied in the Hebrew. And the King James didn't put there in italics. But there is a suffix that indicates that it's a third person masculine plural. So you could read there for that purpose.
Does the square brackets mean a different manuscript, Bill?
Yeah, from the parentheses, yes. That's why they're distinguished in that manner. I mean, I might be able to copy and paste this into the chat so that people can see that we're nuts for talking about this shit.
Yeah, sure.
But there it is. That's the verse in the chat from right to left. So I would read that and say, our fathers have sinned and are not would be better. And we have borne their iniquities. The King James Version is fine, actually, except that first and I would not put in italics.
Yeah, they didn't need to do that because that makes it look.
But we don't know if they had access to this manuscript, this alternate reading either. We don't know that, right? They may not have.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing, though. In the Septuagint Greek, there's no and. Our fathers sinned not. That's what it says. Oh, wow. No, it's kind of weird here. I'm sorry. The next word is third person plural verb, which means to be or to exist. So it's our fathers sinned and do not exist, which means and are not. So Brenton correctly translated our fathers sinned and are not. It's not a technically correct translation, but it's a literally correct translation. But there are no vavs, there are no ands in the Septuagint version of Lamentations 5:7 to translate that vav, that kahi, it would be in Greek. So whatever the Septuagint writers were reading did not have the vavs.
Microphone.
That
activated.
Doesn't necessarily mean that's the correct reading, though. It's just the manuscripts that the Septuagint translators had. And there were divergent manuscripts by the time of Josephus. So I don't think it's incredible to say that they couldn't have existed earlier.
Yeah, so at the time of the Septuagint, there might have been a number of manuscripts they could have used.
Yes. And even Jeremiah said the scribes had already turned the war into a lie in Jeremiah chapter 8. 300 years before the Septuagint. But you know, there is an and in the Vulgate, in the Latin. Patres nostri is our fathers, pegaverant is sinned, et non sunt is and are not. And that's the Vulgate. The and is there twice. And we et nos iniquates eorum portavenus, and we have borne their iniquities, is basically what that says. And there's the Latin, and it has, I mean, this is Jerome's Vulgate, right? It's 420 AD maybe, or something like that. But it has the and in it twice. Those two muted. Ets, E-T. So that's kind of interesting. I think that's kind of funny, right? Did we finish this chapter?
Yeah.
So, okay. I don't know if there's anything else to talk about. I mean, we just made half an hour out of microphone one activated. Verse.
Yeah.
But that's the shit you go through all the time to translate a verse. I mean, not every verse needs that kind of attention, but that's what you go through all the time when you translate, when you're doing a translation. That's all the stuff you got to consider. It's representative of that anyway.
Do you think the Vulgate had access to different manuscripts that we don't have today, and so you would consider it alongside the Septuagint Bill?
Yeah, you know, I sort of would, even though the Vulgate's kind of late. I think I've seen other differences between the Septuagint and the Vulgate that were interesting, and that I couldn't simply dismiss as Talmudic tribe, right? I have seen other differences like that, but it's not very often that I read Latin because I don't really know it that well. Even if I could read some verses like this verse, even without knowing the English, I would know like 75% of this verse. I would have to look up Portavenus and Pecaverant, because I only took Latin for 1 year in school, and that was 49 years ago. So screw that, right?
Yeah.
I can remember that shit. Well, anyway, I got a Latin dictionary handy, and I would look those up, but I could read the rest of it. So my Latin isn't very good, so I don't read it often. Let me just put it that way. I don't try.
That's a long time. That's a long time, Bill.